They also came to mourn an ideal that he represented and a town that he once dominated with verve and humor and memorable flashes of temper. Like Mr. McCain, many of the Republicans who attended have found themselves deeply discouraged by their own party's president. But unlike Mr. McCain, most of them do not say so out loud, for fear of rage by Twitter or retribution by the base. It was almost as if it were a meeting of Washington's political underground, if the underground met in a grand cathedral with 10,650 organ pipes. For his part, Mr. Trump spent the morning railing again on Twitter about his opponents, the news media, and the investigation into his campaign's interactions with Russia during the 2016 election. He quoted supporters asserting that the inquiry was rigged to spy on Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's political opponent, misspelling his predecessor's name, and that this is the scandal here, a police state. He complained about corruption at the DOJ and FBI, and said the news media has become tainted and corrupt. On his way to his Virginia golf club, he unleashed a few more combative tweets, threatening to terminate a trade agreement with Canada, and warning that Congress should not interfere with these negotiations. By the end of the day, in a possible rejoinder to Ms. McCain, he tweeted in all caps, "Make America Great Again." Standing in for Mr. Trump at the cathedral were his daughter, Ivanka Trump, and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as well as his chief of staff, John F. Kelly, and national security advisor, John R. Bolton, seated not far away from former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Rudolph W. Giuliani, the president's lawyer and longtime political ally of Mr. McCain, also attended. Mr. McCain, who died last weekend at 81, directed his own farewell with the same contrarian spirit that flavored his political career, and it came off just as he would have wanted. The 2.5-hour ceremony blended the majesty of the officially designated National House of Prayer, the discipline of his cherished Naval Academy, and the unabashed, unapologetic patriotism of a 4th of July fireworks display. As he battled brain cancer, Mr. McCain told his advisors months ago that he wanted Mr. Bush and Mr. Obama to speak at his funeral, then called each of them to make that request. The point was to emphasize the common values that they shared despite their differences. "That's what McCain's trying to say," said Mark Salta, his longtime confidant. "The message of the whole service is supposed to be, there's a better way to do this. There's a better way to do politics than the way we've been doing it lately." Mr. Obama admitted to a certain surprise when Mr. McCain called to ask him to speak at his service, but said he came to realize it demonstrated the senator's relish for unpredictability, disdain for self-pity, largeness of spirit, and mischievous streak. "After all," Mr. Obama said, "what better way to get a last laugh than to make George and I say nice things about him to a national audience?" The former president noted that despite their debates, he and Mr. McCain shared a commitment to overhauling immigration and campaign finance laws. And he praised the senator for his fidelity to American principles, like the rule of law and a free press. He recalled that during their 2008 contest, Mr. McCain corrected a supporter who denounced Mr. Obama as an Arab. "I was grateful, but I wasn't surprised," he said. "I never saw John treat anyone differently because of their race or religion or gender." That did not mean they agreed all the time, he noted. "It's no secret, it's been mentioned, that he had a temper," Mr. Obama said. "And when it flared up, it was a force of nature, a wonder to behold. His jaw grinding, his face reddening, his eyes boring a hole right through you. Not that I ever experienced this firsthand, mind you."